Funding for Think comes from SMU Master and Doctor of Liberal Studies programs.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Ira Glass admits it. The show he and choreographer Monica Bill Barnes have created together, a sort of This American Life episode told through audio and creative movement, does not sound like a good idea at all. And yet, their idea was to search for ways these two very different media, dance and radio, might be used together to tell stories and communicate human emotion. It has earned rave reviews in multiple other cities where it's been presented, and next Saturday, July 11th, you'll have the chance to judge for yourself when three acts, two dancers, one radio host goes on stage at the Winspear Opera House in Dallas as part of the ongoing Think Speak Speaker series. Monica Bill Barnes is artistic director of Monica Bill Barnes and Company. Ira Glass is host and producer of This American Life. They join us to talk about how their unlikely collaboration came about and what the experience has taught them both. Welcome to Think.
Nice to be here.
Thank you so much.
I wonder if thinking, well, this probably won't work, is liberating in a way that confidence that you've had the greatest idea ever might paralyze you.
Yeah, I think it's a great starting point. I mean, I sort of feel that way about everything I do, that it feels like it has the permission at least to fail. I think, you know, I try and get those out of the way before I make people pay money for tickets. But
and stakes are low. Like when we started, we didn't know we were going to be touring to opera houses. Like we were just like, oh, let's put this together and see if it could be a thing. And so they had a very, like, nobody's ever tried this before as far as we know. Like nobody's trying to combine radio stories and modern dance. So you know. You do feel free. We did feel free to let's see.
Yeah.
What was the first time that you met?
We met at a talent show that was this great thing called a talent show, and it was set up like Dancing with the Stars, and Ira was...
This particular episode, every episode of the talent, it was like a live event in a bar, basically. So 100 people were there. And my wife was one of the organizers. So, yeah.
So, Ira was dancing with a professional choreographer and dancer, and I was invited to be a dance judge.
Now, to say that makes it sound like that's something that I would just do, is dance. But, in fact, I had never danced before. And the process of teaching me this, like, I don't know, 4-minute routine took, like, 6 weeks or 8 weeks. And it was around week six that the professional said to me, like, wait, are you counting? I was like, no, counting. Like, what? Like, what's going through your head? I was like, what's going through my head is like, turn here, lift your arm here, like, do this. I was like, no. She's like, count to the beat. Like, do it on the beat. So that's how basic my, like, I was awful.
Well, you know, I wouldn't know that either, that you're supposed to count as you go along.
Yeah, one of those dancer things.
They just didn't tell us that in radio school.
So we were, you know, doing a role reversal. Ira was dancing and I was talking, and then we met at that event.
You were a judge. You were very good.
Thanks so much. David Rakoff was also one of the judges, which was fortuitous.
He was a contributor to This American Life for years and years. Very funny. And he was a dancer. He had been a dancer, and he's since he died, but he was still alive then.
Yeah.
So then, Monica, you invited Ira to come see one of your performances?
Yep. He came and saw the company a few months later, and that he wrote this incredibly generous email just saying, I feel like, you know, there's some similarities in our work, and I've been a fan for years of This American Life and always felt like the way that Ira puts a radio show together, it was actually very similar to the way that I think of putting a dance show together, of sort of trying to weave ideas around a central theme, but, you know, have a lot of surprises and highlight sort of the awkward humanity of moving and attempting to do something in front of people. So that was one of the best emails I've ever gotten. And then we just started talking from there.
And I think, like, your relationship to the modern dance world is a little bit like my relationship to the documentary world. I mean, This American Life is a documentary show that we never call a documentary show because we think that most people hear the words documentary and they just think, like, that is not for me. That will be boring.
I'm out of here.
And so yeah, exactly. So we literally, like, we'd never call it that. But it is a documentary show. And I feel like we've tried to make something that's more audience friendly and more fun to listen to, and although you love modern dance, I feel like your relationship to the modern dance world is
totally the same. I feel like, you know, humor is a major element, trying to really make the work as relatable as possible and ultimately something that someone who never has seen a dance show would be interested in and would feel really at home in an audience. So it just seemed like there were a lot of similarities, but obviously the mediums don't relate in any sort of way. So I think it took us a while.
And if I can just interrupt, yeah. and one of the things that I felt like was very promising when we talked was that you guys were a successful dance company. You're performing in dance venues all the time, but we had the same thought about your company when I saw you perform, which was you had this thought of like, I think if not dance people would like this, they'd really be into this. And when I saw them perform for the first time, I got really excited because I just felt like, oh, this is just like. This has the feelings of our radio show, except they don't use any words. And if I could just get this in front of our audience would really dig it. And you were having the thought of like, if we could just get this in front of people who are not dance people, you thought they would really dig it. And so I feel like we were totally like together on our sense of like, people would like this if they just knew that it existed.
So it's a big leap from that idea to, I don't know if you sat down over coffee or if you went into a studio and moved around together and talked. How did you get to the point where you were like, let's at least, you know, really seriously talk about how we would collaborate?
I mean, early Alzheimer's has kicked in for me, so I don't remember. Monica, what was it?
Well, we did actually meet for coffee and talked about all sorts of things. And sort of at the end of that, I can't remember which one of us said, I mean, it would be really fun to make something together. And then there was sort of an awkward pause. And I'm pretty sure Ira then said, like, yeah, but that would be terrible. I mean, what would that be? That sounds horrible. And I was like, yeah, no, I mean, it does sound sort of horrible.
Wait, so then what was the meeting just like, was like, oh, it was like, I was trying to figure out how I could like get my audience in front of you. Like, basically, look, could we do something where you guys would dance, but it would be some sort of radio show event that eventually, Chris, it became this, the first thing we did wasn't this show now, but basically, I put a show on stage that we had cameras there and beamed it into movie theaters, and we had our regular contributors, including David Rekoff and David Sedaris and Tig Notaro. But really, the reason why I did it was so Monica and Anna, her partner in this, could dance for our audience. So that was what I thought, like, that's what we'll do.
Yeah, and that was an incredible experience. And then after that, Ira just said, we've got people who are sort of like, we'd like to see one more thing from that company. And Ira's response was like, you can't. Like, you have to show up in a city where they happen to be and they're only going to be doing two shows. And that's sort of the way of the dance world.
Right. People would come up to me and be like, how do I see those ladies again who are in your show? And I'd be like, you can't. You got to book them yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you've got to raise a little bit of money and get like clear enough space for them to do a little number.
Do you own any Marley Ford? Do you know what that is?
It's a big dance thing. So then and then Ira said, well, we should just do like an encore show in New York. And, you know, like I'll just put a blog post and, you know, the audience in New York will come out. And that was great.
And it'll be all dancing. That's it. Yeah.
Yep. And then we did it and that was great. And then after that, we sort of said, well, we should maybe do it again. But my feeling was, well, we, you know, as a dance company, we already tour. So I don't think we should just tour with you promoting it or acting as a, you know, as a promoter in this. I actually feel like what would be fun would be to have you in the show. And if it's your audiences who are really coming, they would be so excited, as I can imagine I would be, as, you know, somebody who is interested in what you are doing and what you make, to see you in a dance show. And that was sort of the pitch. And then we did just start working in a studio. I mean, honestly, I feel like our first rehearsals were so strange, you know, because
that I do remember.
Like, you know, as dancers, you have like a whole set of different clothes that you wear, and Ira would come in his button up and jeans, and we would be like, oh, good, good, you're gonna dance just like that. Perfect. Okay, so
well, I didn't know. Like, I figured like, go out and buy wardrobe. Like, if somebody had said, like, if there'd been a list of things to bring, I would have brought them.
Tights and leg warmers. And
Yeah. I mean, we thought maybe that was going too far too fast. So, and then we just, you know, I mean,
what is this capizio that everybody talks about? What does that mean? Capizio.
And then we just, you know, we took, I mean, what was so great about, you know, the radio show is it's all archived and online. So I was able to go through and listen to everything. Ira came up with a great list of stories that he felt like were sort of relatable and might be danceable. And then we just started to, you know, sort of put things together. and give it a try. And the first thing that we really hit on was this story about Riverdance, the touring show, and really sort of what it is to be a performer. And
this is a story that we had done on the radio in a sort of 20-minute version that we realized, like, oh, it's a story about a dancer and about the experience of what it's like to dance as a job and how kind of boring dance can be as a job when you're on the road. And, you know, it's like your dream and it's just like the thing you work for all your life. But then, like, once you get it and you're doing it for 8 shows a week, exactly the same thing every show, what that experience is like. And it was interesting. Like, honestly, I had never thought about it until I interviewed that dancer. And so we thought, like, maybe there's a thing that you can make here where we would see the repetitive motion and basically try to do a piece where the visuals would match the idea of it. And then and then we were putting that together, and we got in, and then we were like we've been working for like just a couple of weeks,
yeah.
Right? And
yeah, like two, I think.
And then there was a turn of events.
Yeah. So then Ira comes into rehearsal and says, "You know, my cousin Philip Glass has this show like next Thursday." And
Philip Glass is a composer, right. Classical composer,
rather famous,
the kind of person who tends to perform at a place like an opera house. But yeah, yes. Yeah.
So we said, you know, he just called and invited me to be a part of the show. Should we like test drive our little ditty that we're still figuring out and it's not finished and all, you know?
But it's a charity event. Like, we'd be raising money for charity.
Yeah, yeah, you know. And so I was like, oh, that sounds perfect. Like, you know, you never know how much something's going to fall apart until you do it in front of some strangers. And that sounds great. And he goes, well, it's, you know, it's next Thursday. It's at Carnegie Hall. And I just was like, heart completely sunk, because obviously, you know, the last place you'd show up with a little new idea is Carnegie Hall. But we did it. And it was terrifying, and it went so well. Hmm. Like, it just...
Yeah, it went well. We killed it.
Monica, when you talk about, you know, going through the kind of archive of This American Life shows, that's one fundamental difference between what you do, right? Like, to get a dance perfect, you have to practice it over and over and over. And Ira, as you know, the worst thing you can do for an interview is repeat elements of it and say, can we go back and you say that a different way? It's like the worst thing you can do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's part of what is actually sort of what's so interesting. And it happened so early in our show, this idea, the story of repetition and how the job of dancing and performing has such an element of sort of emotional death built in that nobody knows that you know, so much of the artistry and the work is actually to make the experience feel spontaneous. And I think as an artist, you know, one reason why a collaboration like this is so exciting is that it is new and it brings Anna and I into a new territory, and it's exciting and it's different. And I feel like that's really essential in continuing in a career, is just to keep finding ways to keep yourself interested and surprised. And then, you know, I think our job as performers is to know the material so well that we are able to make it seem spontaneous.
And it's really weird. It's a weird thing, Chris. It's really weird. When you're on the radio, you say you come up with what you're going to say. You write it, and then you say it exactly one time. And like this, you know, when we're there, that'll be our 42nd city we've done the show in. And so Anna and Monica have built in places in the show where I'm allowed to ad lib, knowing that like I simply will not be able to perform the show if I have to do exactly the same thing. I'm just not a good enough. This is one of the things I don't have the chops. I am not a good enough performer to say the same thing, you know, 42 times in 42 cities and have it be the same. I just can't. I'm not at their level.
Ira Glass is with us. He's host and producer of This American Life. Monica Bill Barnes is artistic director of Monica Bill Barnes and Company. They will be collaborating on Saturday, July 11th at the Winspear Opera House in 3 acts, 2 dancers, 1 radio host, part of the Think Speak Speaker series. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call in now to 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program. You can apply now for fall and design your own master's degree at SMU, a customizable evening master's degree for working professionals. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Artistic Director of Monica Bill Barnes and Company, Monica Bill Barnes, and with Ira Glass, who is host and producer of This American Life. They will collaborate on a show called Three Acts, Two Dancers, One Radio Host, which is coming Saturday, July 11th to the Winspear Opera House in Dallas as part of the Think Speak Speaker Series. If you would like to join the conversation, you can find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think, or you can call 1-800-933-5372. I want to go back to something that you alluded to earlier, Monica, which is this risk of boredom in any creative profession. You two are both at the level in your careers where you know how to do what you do really well. And I wonder how often you have to fight the temptation to just sort of lean back on that and not try anything different because you know that people really like what you already do.
I mean, I think often that, I mean, it's an interesting thing. I feel like if you have any level of success and become known for something, that there is such a tendency for people, for presenters, for, you know, critics to want to see the thing that they like. And I feel like it's actually a responsibility on the artist to continue to reinvent and question that. So I think, you know, it is sort of real and present. I mean, I feel like, it was so good to go back and listen to all, you know, radio episodes from This American Life from the very beginning to the current ones. And, you know, I feel like that's something that you are constantly doing in reinventing, you know, the way you work. And
yeah, I mean that's the advantage of the way the show is set up, is that we can constantly look for new things to do. But the truth is, like, you know, there are a lot of kinds of things that we repeat, you know. And for me, like the episodes that get me the most excited with the radio show are when we're just like trying something that nobody's ever tried or we've ever tried. And there's a lot of like weird experiments many of which we kill, but some of which work out. And some of them just, you know, are things like, oh, let's just do an entire episode of the stories that our parents pitch us, the terrible ideas they say at Thanksgiving. Like, you know, you guys should do a story about, like, let's just do a show where we do those stories. Let's just do them. But, like, let's use all of our skill and make those stories amazing. You know, like, let's try that. Like, that was one we did. Or let's do a car dealership for 1 month as they try to make their monthly quota.
I love that.
And, you know,
show.
You start, but I mean, you know, we started that show. It was like seven reporters. We had no idea what was going to happen. And we got incredibly lucky that it turned out to be a very dramatic month. But in the middle of the month, the guys who ran the shop were like, I kind of chose a bad month. We're going to make our goal. And like, fortunately for us, awful for them, like they didn't come close, you know, like, but you know what I mean? Like there are a lot of things like that. And then there are like just weird things that come up, like this past weekend, the musician David Byrne organized this color guard thing with 10 different musical acts and then invited me to work with one of the musical acts to create a piece which included like interviews and music and a color guard team twirling around rifles and spears and flags. And I just feel like, you know, that turned out to be like an incredibly time-consuming piece of documentary, musical, dance, journalism. You know what I mean? Like, but I feel like when you're making something new, it just takes you back to when you were first excited. Let me find Monica. Like, it just gets you back into the headspace of like, I remember when I was just making this up for myself and didn't have an audience. And
yeah,
like, yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I think there's also something that, you know, I feel like, Ira, you're so game for trying things that you haven't done before. And I think one of the pleasures of making the show was working, you know, having you enter a world that is so foreign. And truthfully, I think as adults, if you don't, you know, if you don't professionally dance, I think, you know, dancing is a really awkward world. And I actually feel like I love, you know, seeing people in any social event dance. I mean, I feel like there's so much emotion in it, and it's so telling of how people do express themselves physically. And I feel like there's so much great emotion around attempting to move.
You read so much character, though until you and I, like, we were staying at a hotel when we were playing. Was it Austin that we were in?
Yeah,
and we were in Austin. We were playing Austin, and in the hotel where the venue had put us up, the Paramount Theater had put us up in in this hotel where there was a wedding that weekend, you know, and so Monica and Anna, they just sort of perched like in the bar after the wedding. And honestly, I've never thought to look at the way people dance, and it's so revealing of character. And there was this one, remember that one guy who was sort of like not a great looking guy, kind of old, but and like on the heavy set side, but like what an incredibly expressive, like. Mm-hmm. Like, what was he? It was so amazing to watch.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, I mean, it's so funny. I feel like there is a certain permission. I mean, just like we sort of started talking earlier, that if you feel like you're okay not being good at something, you're so much more interesting in the attempting of the thing. And I feel like, you know, as adults, I always think the best movers are people who feel like, well, I'm not good at this, but I really love doing it. And then there's a sort of freedom, and it's incredible how, you know, people naturally are so rhythmic and are really inventive in their movement. And I mean, he was a show. I mean, I think there was
and ladies love that guy. Oh my God. I was like, but I never, like, Chris, I never would have thought to like just watch the way people dance to like, I just remember the three of us sitting at the bar. I feel like I learned so much about like the way you see stuff.
Absolutely. Well, and it's funny. I think in a way, Anna and I fight our training so much, because, you know, for years and years and years, we've sort of trained to look graceful and, you know, be smooth in our transitions and, you know, all these sort of things that really make you look like a dancer. And then as I started making work really early on, I felt like, gosh, all of this graceful looking like a dancer business really doesn't help to make audience members identify with us. You know, at best, that's going to make people feel a sense of admiration, or you're moving in a way that I don't move, which I think can ultimately alienate the audience from the experience. And my feeling is really wanting to make the work as relatable as possible. And so, you know, Anna and I find that we'll often, you know, watch people and try and sort of mimic what is just second nature, or even, you know, there's oftentimes stumbles or things that I put in the choreography that are, you know, meant to look like they just happen. And so
that was one of the things that blew my mind. Like, there's certain pieces where I would see that I had seen you perform the piece, and then like, and then it was in a later show that we were in, and like I realized, like, oh, every time you do it, there's like a little, like, you guys accidentally bump into each other, and I was like, oh, that's part of the choreography, that you bump into each other like that. It looks so real. It looks like you're really like a real accident. I was like, oh, okay.
And it's just a weird use of like our skill set, which is the, you know, the ability to physically recreate the same idea. But, you know, sometimes we'll be in rehearsal and we'll say, you know, Anna, I'm, you know, that part where I sort of trip, like if I trip, but if I lift my chin like this, does it look like I didn't see the thing that I tripped? And she's like, no, like the chin is too much. Like, that feels like you're, you know, you're trying
so
to.
It's so meticulous.
It's such an embarrassing amount of detail that goes into looking like just a person, you know, just a everyday person who
But
lives.
It's interesting. Like, I never thought about that until we started working together, that a lot of dance isn't designed about relatability in the way that like a radio show is. Like, most dance is designed around being unbelievably impressive, superhuman, doing things that no normal person can do. And so if you want the dance to be relatable, you're like working in a totally different vocabulary. In a way that reminded me of like on the radio, you know, when I started at NPR, I sounded like a normal NPR reporter, and then I trained myself out of it, so I sound the way I sound now on the radio, where I'm trying to sound exactly like the way I talk, with all the hesitations and stumbles of a normal person talking, but doing that while I'm narrating, because I feel like that makes it more relatable. And I don't even know if that's true, but in my mind, that's what I've told myself.
Can you still do your NPR voice?
It's funny. I used to be able to do it perfectly, and I used to have a girlfriend who would make me. She would hand me like a menu at a restaurant. She'd do this like on NPR, like do this like you're on NPR. I think I can. Yeah, I think I could. Hold on, I could open up. Do you want me to try?
Yeah.
All right, hold on. All right.
Need some copy.
I do need some copy, actually. Yeah. But hold on. Let me go to. Should I just go to the KERA webpage? Is there something there that I could read?
You might find a description of our show. Yeah, KERA.org/think.
All right, hold on. KER.org/thing. And I'm going to sound just like everybody on NPR.
Okay.
Okay, here's my goal. All right. Think. Oh, see, I'm doing this myself. All right, here we go. Think with host Chris. Think with Think with host Chris Boyd features in-depth interviews with compelling guests covering a wide variety of topics ranging from history, politics, current events, science, technology, and trends to food and wine, travel, adventure, and entertainment. How was that?
Wow. Well, I think we need to rewrite the description of the show, first of all.
I know, but it doesn't. But then if I were to say it as myself, I would say, like, Think with host Chris Boyd features in-depth interviews with compelling guests covering a wide variety of topics ranging from history and politics and current events and science and technology and trends to you know, food and wine and travel and adventure and entertainment. So, like, doing it as yourself, you know, when you're laughing, you know, this is like a magic trick we haven't tried.
I like this trick.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like so the second way, it feels more, there's more commitment.
It sounds
somehow,
better.
Somehow. Yeah, it's more convincing.
You know, I'm thinking about dance. This is something that you might both respond to. It's one of the only art forms that we don't quit doing after elementary school. Like, maybe we only do it at a wedding and maybe we have to have a drink or two in us. But most people who are not, who have never had any dance training are willing to dance at a party. Whereas people stop singing, they stop drawing, they stop painting, they stop writing poetry. Why do you think that's true?
Huh.
Booze. Booze and music. That's my theory. Seriously, the booze and music. I feel like it's totally chemical, but what do you think?
I think that's so interesting. I mean, I would say everybody sort of sings in private, or many people are in the shower or in the car. And I think, you know, with dancing, I feel like the sort of, I don't know, maybe easy answer is you can get lost in a group, but there are times where I feel like there's a peer pressure to dance and an invitation and a permission that it's okay to, you know, bounce around. I mean, I think weddings are perfect. Like, that's the time where everyone's sort of, you know, a bit emotionally wrung out, which is kind of freeing that there is booze and that it's a bit late in the day. And, you know, there's a freedom.
Oh, right. Anonymity, though. You're saying, like, the crowd factor.
Totally helps. And I think, you know, that your great aunt is dancing and, like, the little kids are dancing. And so there's just a way where, you know, that, like, multi-generational thing makes it feel like, great, we can all just sort of do this and we can get lost. You know, we're sort of buried in the crowd and nobody's actually watching us.
Have you heard about these things that are going on in Brooklyn where it's dance parties but it's completely dark so you can't see anybody?
No.
I know, like, wow. Three or four people have been to them and they say they're amazing.
Really?
Like, you can't see anyone and the music's really loud. You can't see yourself. Like, it's that dark.
And nobody's just hitting each other in the face?
Apparently.
Seems like a groping opportunity.
It does. It seems like that could go wrong in all sorts of ways.
I'm curious about lots of artists in particular and creative people in general talk about the importance of embracing failure. But do you each have a personal backstop? Like, it's one thing to say, I'll try something and it's okay if I fail, but you don't want to make a colossal, spectacular, humiliating failure of yourself, right?
Hope not, I suppose.
You know the distinction I'm talking about, though, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's funny, you know, I feel like for me, what it comes down to is, you know, I think anything and everything is okay to explore. And, you know, the most boring ideas to the most sort of ridiculous. And I think where I draw the line is when I ask people to buy a ticket. You know, I think I think everything has to be acceptable in the exploration process phase of it. But I feel like...
And that's something that's very similar to making the radio show, to making a documentary show. I mean, live radio is so different than what I'm doing. But being in rehearsal with you, Monica, was so much like making the radio show, where we would just write a thing four different ways on the radio show and just be like, do we like this side? Do we like this way? Do we like this way? And then we'll just kill the three that we don't like. Mm-hmm. And when we're rehearsing, you would just try all sorts of things that would fail.
Yes. Yeah. And I think you just, you know, I mean, it's funny. I feel like maybe the artistry comes in the, like, attempting of everything, and then actually the craft comes in putting the show together. That's where, you know, I feel a real responsibility to the audience that we're presenting something that makes, you know, has a logic, has a structure, feels like it's, you know, it's really worthy of
that
time and is fun. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's one thing that also makes the three of us so happy to be in a process together and be performing is that we all have a really keen sense of when the show feels like it's sort of waning or losing interest. And, you know, we shift the show a little bit every time we do it. And I, And I love that. I mean, I think there's a certain kind of performer that is obsessed with those kind of details. And I feel like we are those kinds of performers that...
I remember we did a story years ago when George Burns was still alive, and he must have been like 90 years old, and he was touring around. And this reporter friend of mine, Margie Rockham, was touring with him, and she was going from with him from city to city to city. And he had been doing – he was doing just his act, and he'd been doing a version of the act for 70 years. and he would come off stage, and he would talk to his manager and Margie, and he'd be like, I'm thinking of – changing like the line, he'd be like tweaking like lines in his own act, and like, I'm gonna put the emphasis on this word, and like, is this funnier? And I feel like I totally understand that.
Yep, me too. I mean, I think stand up comics to me are just such a perfect art form, because they are often, if not always, sort of attempting to be thinking of the idea and having it come to them and being surprised by themselves, and yet it's such a nuanced performance, and they have nothing. They have no light changes. They don't have big costume changes, that I think it's such a pure way of entertaining people just with the idea and the way that you present the idea.
Ira, when you are on stage with Monica and Anna, you can, you know, see and hear and maybe even kind of feel the audience. When you're putting the radio show together, you have to just anticipate the way, you know, all these people listening might respond to it, and they might not even listen to it live on the radio. They might podcast it. Does that change the way you think about who's listening?
I mean, it doesn't change the way I think about who's listening. I mean, it's interesting. Like, when you're in front of a crowd, you naturally perform bigger. Like, you know, you get louder. Mm-hmm. Whereas on the radio, like, the right way to talk is kind of the way I'm talking right now, like in a normal talking voice. And one of the things that's happened as we've been out on the road that I've noticed is that when I come back and try to perform for the radio, it's messed me up. And I perform too big. And I have to be like, oh, no, wait, hold on, who am I again? Who am I playing here? All right, I don't talk like this. Versus like a kind of more shouty, like, you know, just because it's so exciting to be in front of other people.
We're speaking this hour with Ira Glass, host and producer of This American Life, and Monica Bill Barnes, artistic director of Monica Bill Barnes and Company. They will be together to perform three acts, two dancers, one radio host, Saturday, July 11th at the Winspear Opera House in Dallas. We'll resume our conversation in a couple of minutes. You can join it by calling 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program. You can apply now for fall and design your own master's degree at SMU, specializing in communications or organizational dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests this hour are choreographer Monica Bill Barnes and radio host and producer Ira Glass. They will be in town on Saturday, July 11th to perform their live show, Three Acts, Two Dancers, One Radio Host, at the Winspear Opera House in Dallas as part of the Think Speak series. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372. I realize we've gotten 43 minutes into this interview, and I haven't really asked you, what is this show? Like, what what exactly can people expect?
I mean, I tell stories. They dance. We know that sounds awful.
Yep. Yeah. We get out. We sort of get in front of that immediately in the very, like, first words we say about the show is just, we all are on the same page that you are on, sitting in the audience. This seems really bad.
Like, it would be bad. Yeah, but there's something about it where the sensibility of it, like basically what it feels like is there's a series of stories just like on the radio show. And it has the feeling of really, I think, the best episodes we ever do on the radio show, where there's a lot of funny stuff and there's a lot of really emotional stuff, and the stories interlock in a way, like they talk to each other in a way that's really nice, where there's stories about the job of being a dancer. And there's stories that are about love, because we feel like we could do stories about love because we got a lot of those and you can dance to it. And stories about loss, which is another thing, and losing what you love. And so you know, there's like 8 or 10 different stories, and some are just dances, some are just talking, and most of them combine the two. And some of the most interesting ones are ones that aren't old This American Life stories, but just ones we built for the show, where I interviewed Anna, Monica's partner in dancing, and Monica about their experience on stage and about what it's like to be a dancer. And you hear them talk about it as you see them move, and it totally changes the way you see what they're doing.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak with Terry in Frisco. Hi, Terry.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Hi, I had a question. Have you ever considered using a visual artist to create a painting live on stage and see what the reaction is of the audience during a show?
We haven't. The short answer is we haven't thought of that.
Because we know nothing about painters. Are you a painter? And that's why you're asking this question?
Yes, I am. I'm actually a contemporary abstract artist.
How long does it take to make a painting?
Well, it really depends. As far as my paintings go, I use a lot of layering. So sometimes it can take as much as several months.
Okay, that would be too long for one of our shows.
Yeah.
But it's a good idea. I don't know. We'll think about it.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Thanks.
So you've done the show. This will be 42 times. How much time is there between performances, and how do you get back ready to go if it's been several weeks?
Well, Anna and I are in rehearsal, 5 days a week, 6 hours a day. So we do have a really sort of feels funny is we run the entire show. We have Ira's recordings of what he's going to say. So we have a sort of, canned version of him in the room, and we'll run the show just for stamina and just to kind of get ourselves back in that mind about 3 or 4 times before we get on a plane and go anywhere.
And then the day of the show, we run the show in the afternoon on stage together.
Yeah.
Partly because it's filled of lighting cues and props and set cues and things like that, so it can tech in. And then I practice at the gym. my parts, the little bit of movement that I have, kind of walking around the stage, just so I remember, wait, I go here, then I go there, then I do this, then I do that. But it's pretty minimal.
Yeah. It's great. We walk into the theater at 8 a.m. and then by 8 p.m., we have the show on its feet. So it's a really long day where I feel like we all are able to get back into it.
If you guys are listening to canned Ira in those rehearsal sessions you have in between, when he's live on stage, are you like, that's not the emphasis you normally put on the second
yeah,
syllable?
Good question.
Well, we've gotten into some bad habits where we know what the canned Ira is going to say, so we'll say it along with him.
Is that true?
It is. You got to keep yourself sort of entertained. One of us will usually take the Ira, and then one of us will sort of take the nodding and listening job while we're waiting for our cue to go on. At this point, I feel like we've actually gotten, we've grown so accustomed to performing with each other and with Ira that I feel like, we don't, it's not a hard transition going from rehearsal to the live performance. Every once in a blue moon, the cues don't quite work out because Ira's actually mixing the show live on his iPad while he's performing. So, sometimes things don't quite go as planned. But we've sort of got a lot of good backup plans that will save us. So it's not so hard. But that very first time at Carnegie Hall, we were just sweating bullets before we started moving because it was so hard to hear the cue. There was, music mixed in with the recorded interview, mixed in with Ira talking and editing. And Anna and I were just, painfully listening to make sure that we could understand.
And it's like a really weird show. It was like Philip Glass and Patti Smith. And I can't even we were just like, why are we on this bill?
Yeah.
Do you all remember the first piece of art that really obsessed you maybe as kids? You don't have to say Philip Glass, Ira, if you don't want to.
Oh, it definitely wasn't. Are you kidding? as kids, for sure, for me, it was Peanuts. There was no question.
The cartoon.
It was Yeah, the cartoon. Mm-hmm. Like no, no, the actual.
So yeah, avant-garde of you.
I don't know, Monica, what is it? What was it for you?
I mean, I think, you know, I feel like so many dancers will say this, and it's actually a part of our show, but it was seeing a chorus line. We came to New York and was running on Broadway, and my parents took me to it, and I was 7 years old, and I'd already fallen in love with the city and thought, this is the only place for me. And then we saw that show, and I just felt like, oh, I've found what I want to do with my life. I want to, you know, sing and dance. And then I realized I had no ability to sing, so I just cut that part off and kept the dancing.
Wait, but the chorus line is such like an unromantic view of what it is to be a dancer. Like, it's so weird. It's like almost like an anti-advertisement. Like, how is it that, like, what were you seeing?
She was seven.
I was seven. I mean,
I know, but it's like she saw a documentary about how hard it is to do any job, and then she's like, I think I want to do that job. Like, what was it?
Well, I think it's funny. I actually feel like the sort of drama, the passion, the like, this is all I ever wanted. I feel like you identify with that as a kid so much that I think in some ways at seven you are the like ultimate underdog. And so to see all of these, you know, people just working so hard and pouring their hearts out on stage felt like, yes, yes, that's what you should do. You should sacrifice everything for what you love. I mean, I think oddly it really falls in love with or falls in line with sort of like a passionate soon to be teenage sense of anything worth doing is worth struggling for.
Yeah.
So I feel like I actually fell in love with, you know, what it was and is to be a dancer, and that, you know, there is this sort of, you know, the whole one of the sort of central themes is that, you know, you can only do it for so long, and then you stop and you don't know what to do with your life. And I feel like in some odd way the drama of that actually had a certain appeal. That you're
doing it's something. A tragic. It's not tragic. Just like a it's not just a mission. It's a tragic mission.
Yeah. So, and I loved it. I mean, yeah, I loved it. So I would say that for me.
And then with Peanuts, I think the thing I related to was like, it's emotional. It's really, really emotional. I really related to Charlie Brown.
It's funny. I liked Peanuts as a kid a lot, too. My dad had a huge collection of little, like, paperback-sized books of the strips. And if you look at it as an adult, it's about like a depressed 8-year-old, you know, who goes through life with these like horrible, like soul crushing existential questions.
No, I know. And I think like it's funny, like I always appreciate when there's art for children that's sad. I think a lot of kids, and like not because of like, you know, like there was no abuse or anything, like it was like a suburban kid, you know what I mean? Like there was nothing awful going on. But I just think some kids by disposition are kind of sad. And then obviously lots of kids are going through like, you know, bad parenting and bad situations where it's and just, I don't know where they are sad for like very, very serious reasons. But I think like having art that acknowledges like these are feelings that it's OK to think about and live in. And I mean, I didn't even think of it as art. You know what I mean? It was just like this thing that I really liked and was drawn to and thought about all the time. And one of the first things I was ever in that was a play was when I was in sixth grade. I organized a production of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. I was 11, you know, and like cast myself as Charlie Brown since it was my show, which is my system. Like that's how
you're still at the helm today.
Yeah, I know. So that's how you get your own radio show, I guess. And cast my friends in all the other parts, and we got somebody to play the piano since none of us could play the piano, and you know, like we put on like you know a 20-minute version of like the Broadway show You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. Like I was really. It meant a lot to me in some way, but also like taught me like, oh, you can just put on a show, can't you, if you decide.
Having interviewed other people that have worked with you and for you, I think my understanding is you're a lovely person to work with, but you can't possibly be as laid back as you come across on the air, right? I mean, like you have to be like really fanatically obsessed with detail. And how does that play itself out when you are working on any kind of project?
Well, like Miss Barnes, who on stage is just like a vulnerable, charming performer.
The dragon lady off stage.
Not a dragon lady, but just I would describe us both as control enthusiasts.
Love that word.
You know what I mean? Like I think like you can't make anything good if you, right, Monica? Like
yeah.
You can't make anything good if you're not going to be attentive to every single second of it and really think about, you know, everything, you know, everything, every single beat of it and the construction of everything and the tone of voice and the, like, just every part of the coloration and just everything. Like right now, like, you know, I'm talking to you from the This American Life studio. And around us, as I look around the offices around us, there are like glass windows. Like I see there are four different producers who are mixing this weekend's radio show. And like as soon as I get out of here, I'm going to be listening to mixes and giving the most minute kind of move this pause over 0.2 seconds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like make this 3 dB louder and just, you know, for a 59-minute show.
What yeah. happens when you
And
put...
I think that...
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. Well, I was just saying, I mean, I feel like it's also... to be opinionated, to have instincts, to follow them, to not be afraid to say them out loud. I mean, I feel like that was part of, you know, what was so fun and like kind of shocking in our first rehearsals would be, you know, I feel like I'm a bit more.
You're the boss.
Yeah, yeah.
You're trying to say.
And I feel like, you know, my effort is, you know, in like dealing with a lot of people and, you know, that I'm sort of a bit more diplomatic and saying, well, this is an interesting idea, but let's also maybe try this idea. And it was actually kind of great. I would go like, well, the second idea seems just really stupid. And I was like, well, you've got something there.
I've gotten more diplomatic actually watching your management style. I have. I'm totally like, people really like Monica so much. I'm going to be more like Monica in expressing my feelings.
But I think there's something so positive to that that, you know, there's no point in being vague about your reactions. I don't think that makes any good work. I think you want the work to be distinctive. And that has to do with obsession around details, but also just a real sense of opinion and direction. And I feel like we both have those in spades.
I just think I'm a little bit more of a dick. I think that's what you're trying to say. But not like awful. Like not awful, but just a little bit more.
We have a really good time.
Do you have any post show rituals?
We taught Monica to drink.
Yes.
The crew and Anna and I have taught Monica. She didn't drink. I think we're ready for Dallas. So like,
oh, yes, yes.
I hope
yes,
we go,
no,
go two stepping somewhere. And
yeah, it is. It's a coincidence that I started drinking right around when we made the show.
Is this true? Like you never drank before, and now thanks to Ira's influence.
Yeah, yeah, I wouldn't have gone on the radio saying it, but yes, I didn't.
Oh, sorry, I didn't realize that we were keeping that from people.
The general public of Dallas. I'm
sorry.
Sure nobody will mind. No, it's a funny thing. I actually just never started drinking, and if you sort of make it past college without drinking, then you have to sort of make an event of starting, and somehow I just decided I'd turned 40, and I thought, you know, I should really see what this drinking is all about. Maybe it had something to do with making of the show. But we have an incredible, you know, production creative team that tours with us. Robbie
that also
and Tess,
drinks.
That also drinks. And, yeah, I mean, you know, you're so keyed up after a performance. And even though it's the same show, something different has gone on and we have to talk about it. Yeah. And you know, it is a tradition of the theater that you do go out and, you know, decompress and reflect,
as you do, Chris, I'm sure, as soon as this music ends and the show ends.
Between now and the 1 o'clock hour. I bolt a couple down. Ira Glass is host and producer of This American Life. Monica Bill Barnes is artistic director of Monica Bill Barnes and Company. They will perform 3 acts, 2 dancers, 1 radio host Saturday, July 11th at the Windspear. It's been a delight to have both of you. Thank you for making the time.
It's been so much fun.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker, engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is associate producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. I'm Chris Boyd. Have a great day.